But I want to mention one other act of Jefferson's in his early tenure as a member of the House of Burgesses, and that again has to do with the problem of slavery. Jefferson seconded a motion by Richard Bland to allow voluntary emancipation. At that point, if you wanted to emancipate slaves in Virginia, you had to prove to the general court that your slave had done some remarkably meretricious activity, or meritorious activity, I should say. Bland decides to try to pass a law that will make emancipation voluntary on the will of the master. Bland is shouted down. He doesn't even get a chance to read out the bill. He's denounced as an enemy to his country. This is a formative experience for Jefferson. Jefferson is coming to realize the limits of reform, and this will inform a lot of his activities on slavery for the rest of his career. It's significant how Jefferson explains this failure on the part of his fellow Virginians. Rather than seeing it as an inconsistency between the revolutionary principles and slaveholding practices, he blames it on the colonial experience. Our minds were circumscribed within narrow limits by an habitual belief that it was our duty to be subordinate to the mother country in all matters of government. And this will be a recurrent strategy on Jefferson. He is so tormented with the problem of slavery that he has a tendency to try and blame it on others. As we'll see, he does that both with Northerners and with the English. Now I want to turn to a private part of Jefferson that's quite important, and that is his marriage in 1772 to Martha Wales Skelton. She's a widow, the wife of Bathurst Skelton, one of his college classmates. From all accounts, she was an extremely attractive, tall woman, graceful, a fine dancer, a good horse rider. She sang, she played the harpsichord. Perhaps most important of all, like Jefferson, she shared a passion for Laurence Sterne. Jefferson woos her from the summer of 1770 all the way to their wedding on January 1st, 1772. And what follows is an extended wedding party that lasts all the way till January 18th, when Jefferson finally departs with his wife for Monticello. Now, Martha Wales Skelton's father was John Wales, not surprisingly a Welshman, who'd made a killing in land speculation and the law. He was one of the wealthiest planters in Virginia. And when he died in 1774, Jefferson would inherit from him 11,000 acres and 134 slaves, which makes him one of the largest planters and one of the largest slave owners in all of Virginia. And it's because of this remarkable wealth that he feels he can finally give up the law. There was also, however, another legacy, and that is a legacy of debt. His father-in-law left him roughly about 17,000 pounds, which today would be somewhere on the order of, say, $1.5 million of debts. But Jefferson's assets are so large, he feels that this is not a huge challenge. It turns out he'll never be able to overcome that debt and die in deep debt. Within 9 months of his marriage, his first child is born, Martha. He'll call her Patsy. She's born on September 27, 1772, and she's probably the one person that is closest to Jefferson throughout the length of his life. All right, now I want to turn to the moment that Jefferson first enters the national limelight. And he does it with a remarkable publication, which he'd written late in July of 1774, entitled The Instructions to the Virginia Delegates in the Continental Congress. It's an extremely radical document. In fact, I would argue it's probably the most radical American document written prior to Thomas Paine's Common Sense. As such, the state convention flatly rejects Jefferson's document. It's simply too radical. Fortunately, his friends, who had great respect for him, published it in the Virginia Gazette under a new title, the title that we know it as, A Summary View of the Rights of British America. And once people learned of it, it was quickly reprinted both in Philadelphia and London, and really established his reputation as a leading figure in the American struggle for independence and freedom. Now, Jefferson's argument in Summary View is based on a very peculiar interpretation of colonial American history. He argues that America was in fact created by Americans without the aid or help of Great Britain. America was conquered and her settlements made and firmly established at the expense of individuals and not of the British public. Their own blood was spilt in acquiring lands for that settlement, their own fortunes expended in making that settlement effectual. For themselves they fought, for themselves they conquered, and for themselves alone they have the right to hold. And as free and independent immigrants, Jefferson believed that Americans were in a position to adopt any government they chose, any government that, in his words, shall seem most likely to promote public happiness. Thus, it was their choice to remain under the sovereignty of the King of England.